Welcome to Bridging the Gap. I'm your host, Marianne Rose. You are about to embark on a relevant and timely journey of thought with registered psychologist, Dr. Cyrus Dirksen. Thank you for tuning in and expect to be enlightened right now. Hey there, Cyrus.
Hey, Marianne.
Great to see you today.
Great to see you too.
Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are.
Mm-hmm.
We're about to go into something. This is going to be passed by the time the radio hears this, but we're about to have a torch hit our city, our province. It's called a torch.
Okay.
Because we're getting like 20 degree hike in temperature.
What?
Yeah. This weekend. People will have come out of it by the time they hear this, but I still wanted to mention it. It's like, what? Isn't that weird?
That
Does
is
that
strange.
Happen?
That is strange. I thought it was already warm, but it's going to be even just nuts, hey?
Like 5 degrees.
5 degrees.
In January in Winnipeg, Manitoba, is usually minus 35.
Yes.
It's weird.
That is very...
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, it can almost be a problem, right? Me personally, I mean, it's so enjoyable, but it gets the roads icy and all that kind of stuff, too. So it's just, it can be tricky.
Yeah.
Something to manage. Wow.
If I had it in advance, I would be able to tell people, like, stock up on windshield washer fluid. I mean, if this happens again, you know, and you're hearing this now and you missed it, and okay, go get some. Just have some.
Yeah.
Have it handy. Sometimes these things come quickly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
They're used to this in Alberta.
Yeah, the Chinook, right?
Yeah,
they have
it
that.
Fluctuates a lot.
Yes.
Here. Yeah, so just being able to get used to change and with weather and with life, and I think it's a metaphor for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The weather often brings us metaphors. Everything brings us metaphors. It's just like you can use anything. The Bible is full of metaphors. We actually have one today. The greatest is the least is a story that Jesus talks about how in the kingdom of heaven, if you look at what it's supposed to look like here on earth, because he's prayed that prayer for us, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Mm-hmm. He says that the greatest is actually the least.
Such an interesting idea to do the opposite of our culture and our world, because I think when he's talking about that, he's talking about the way that we evaluate things, the way that we see the world is very different than the way that he sees the world. And what he values is not the things that we value. And so when we say somebody is great, he's like, I don't measure that way, right? I don't look at it that way. And so then how does he measure? You know, if there's a different way, we want to understand that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To align myself with that picture, I'm confronted with my prejudice. If I see something as weak, I need to analyze that. If I'm wanting to have this lens of this kingdom reality instead of my own reality, because we often have to make that shift. It's like, oh, I'm going to turn this up on its head.
Totally. Yeah, and it's tricky, right? Because we're so built to operate a certain way. Even when you hear this, even if, let's say at the end of listening to us, you're like, wow, I really agree with them. You know, the least shall be the greatest. My guess is that you would likely shift back pretty quickly to your typical way of seeing the world because it's so ingrained in us. This would be a huge challenge to train ourselves to see the world differently.
Yeah.
And even people who have been exposed to this kind of idea for a very long time have a real challenge. Our culture is so invasive. And so this could be very life-changing, but a huge challenge.
Yes, a huge challenge. I'll give you an example of what challenge comes to mind for me as I was watching this fabulous interview with two of my favorite people. I couldn't even believe that they were on stage together at the same time. I'm like, what? That guy's perfect in this part of the world, and that guy is amazing in this part of the world, and they're on stage together, and the guy that was doing the interview, not good. And I was like, oh man, they could have a better interviewer. Like, if they're going to have these guys, they're all stellar. And I'm just like, okay, if I was going to spin that on its head, and I were going to rather not be critical.
Right.
Rather see it as precious.
Mm.
Oh, he's fumbling.
Mm.
And also, isn't that human?
Mm-hmm.
Don't I want to give him the grace instead of the judgment and think that, oh, he didn't do such a good job? Why did I snarl in my criticism? Why did I go ick?
Mm-hmm.
Because, oh, he has this stellar and this stellar and he is so much less than this stellar. That's the thing I want to put on its head. Like, that's an example of a shift I want to make sure I change.
Mm-hmm.
My perception and my judgment were cruel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be like that.
Yeah. It's so tricky, right? It's right there. And it gets us back, you know, to that idea, right, of, like, you saw it in yourself where it's like, oh, I don't want to judge that way. So then it's like, well, how do we judge? I mean, one thing I see is that, you know, you have this God who comes down as a person, Jesus. You know, there's different aspects of the story. I mean, sometimes he's in the front, you know, like he's teaching. But, I mean, if you look at the broad scope, even in those kind of moments when he's being held up as a teacher or as a healer or things like that, I mean, if you think about it, it's like, well, this is God coming down. And I mean, we just went through Christmas and God coming down as a person, which is pretty humbling to kind of go from, you know, glory to, you know, dust and like being made of, you know, just chemicals on the earth in a frame that withers and can be injured and all these kinds of realities of being, you know, a person, a human being. And then, you know, if you want to kind of go on a smaller scale than that, you even see him like, you know, in certain parts of his ministry, washing his disciples' feet. Here's the leader, and he has these people who have followed him, and he's washing their feet. Or if you go to the end of his earthly ministry, and you see him on the cross being tortured, and we can maybe hold up a cross now as being a glorious thing, but it was like a torturous thing, shameful to be on a tree and to be just so vulnerable and weak-looking. So what is he doing in those moments that's so opposite to what we would consider powerful or great? I mean, even the people around were missing it because they saw a savior of a Messiah and that they were looking for. They were thinking of somebody who would come in looking powerful and maybe more like a king to save them in the way that we would think. And yet he's saying, you know, if you don't wash each other's feet, you can't have a part in me. Like, if you want to be great, you have to become the least. So that's tricky.
Yeah. If you don't let me wash your feet, then you can have no part in
it.
I need you to realize that I am going to serve you, not lord over you.
Yeah.
And he is ultimately lord, but it's not how he is, even in relationship. He's so tender like that. Like, he's not coming and slapping you when he's correcting you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It might feel like a slap because you're still having to deal with your ego. And you're being like, oh, ouch, ow, prick, prick, you know. But him, in the way he approaches the situation, is often really gentle and calm, peaceful, and much less like an authoritarian.
Totally. Like, I mean, that would be one side, I think, of what he's saying here, which is, I mean, he's glorious, right? Like, if you look at the dynamic, it's like he's this glorious, perfect example, and he's coming down and he's washing the feet of people who are, you know, filled with sin. And I think that's part of it. It's like, if we're going to be least, if we're going to follow that example, it's like, even if we are doing something well, and maybe we have some things in our lives we're doing better than others, and so it's like, okay, so there's this thing, maybe I'm not doing it well compared to how God would do it, but I can do it better than Fred or Sam or whatever. But you're not experiencing that in a way that puts other people below you. Like you said, lords over people. Like, how do you love? And there's kind of this gentleness, a lowliness, where you are even shadowing your glory, where you are like, I'm good at this, but I'm not going to make a fuss about it. And I'm going to approach other people from a lowliness perspective, from a gentleness perspective. And I think that's a huge piece of what he's talking about. When you love, approach people like this, like he did.
When God looks on the heart, man looks on the outward appearance. And scripture talks about that, where before us we have appearances, and that's what we see and that's what we highlight. But he reminds us it's the heart. And so to be able to take those steps back and say, oh, this isn't what that's about. The appearance is a shell. And to get to the real picture, the heart of the matter, you have to kind of break that and see it as something that isn't even reality. Mm-hmm. Like, it's cloaked in our bodies. Like, mm-hmm. our bodies are real. Maybe a little strange to say it this way, but our spirits are even more real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, these are critical pieces of ourselves. One of the things that's kind of interesting about this idea of becoming the least and kind of doing the opposite of what our culture would say, or maybe even what we would naturally want. Like, typically our bodies are built to want pleasure, comfort, you know, like sugar, things like that. And yet, if you were to look at actually what brings steadiness and happiness and things like that, it's actually a paradox. If people are seeking pleasure, like, it's called a hedonic paradox. If you're seeking pleasure, some people call it like a happiness trap. Like, you're actually going to be cycling in this and you're not going to get fulfilled. So you have to kind of give up your seeking pleasure in order to find peace. You have to kind of enter into the pain of life. We were just talking about community and how it's like, if you just seek pleasure in community, it actually doesn't bring life. But if you actually enter into community and love in spite of the pain, it brings life, it brings something to you. I think God even built it into the way that we interact with the world, this kind of upside downness to us, where he's speaking through our brain structures and our social structures, where it's like, if you just seek after yourself, there is an emptiness. Follow me, where it's like, you have to give up your life, you have to give up your seeking pleasure, you have to give up your status in order to find what you're really looking for, and ultimately that's him. But even just from our kind of natural state, it's true.
Yeah. I love that you said, in spite of the pain. Because, again, on the surface, pain is such a real experience we go through in relationship. And it could be in our physical body, and it could be definitely the way that people show up with each other. You can choose pain, or you can choose just that much deeper. It's just like even this person who was on the stage not being as stellar and eloquent in their speech, but they were trying, and they were doing their best, and they were even more humble in a way, and not being maybe super classy and less eloquent, so did that need to be knocked?
Right.
No, it didn't. And it's just like, okay, then what am I doing with this shift?
Yeah.
Why do I need to do that? It's painful to experience this, but in spite of that, love exists on the other side of that.
Right. Totally. And I think there's another aspect to this. We've been talking about our ability to temper ourselves in our strength, you know, not seek after just pleasure, kind of approach other people with kindness and gentleness, and how we interact in that way. And there's another aspect, which is, you might say, like, boy, I really have to be like Jesus. I have to really shadow my glory and like how wonderful I am at different things. And I have so much more amazingness in me, you know, than other people who are weaker or whatever, have less gifting or less abilities. One of the things that I think is also being hit on here by being the least is not necessarily kind of shadowing and like, oh, you're so wonderful, so you need to turn that around and be the least. I think there's another thing, which is more along the lines of, you need to realize the truth of your own weakness. Don't be deluded into feeling like you have all of this natural glory in your personality and in your abilities. I mean, we have, within our society, we have a classification of narcissism, which is, you know, people who, beyond the normal person, have, you know, their own sense of feeling like they're glorious and feeling like they're wonderful and better than other people. So we have that even amongst ourselves. I wonder what Jesus would say about human narcissism. I mean, would he just go to those extremes who have, like, narcissistic personality disorder, or would he say, you're all narcissistic? You don't realize, you know, the sin in your lives and the weakness that you have, and part of becoming the least of these is actually just realizing the truth of how you have fallen short of the glory of God and how you have this weakness in you. And that's not to be somebody to go into a depressive state or something like that, because then alongside that truth of God still loves you, God still is wanting to die for you, lift you up, and glorify you, which is this huge mystery of, like, God loving us in our state of weakness. But if we can not just shadow the glory that we have or the strength in order to be gentle, but also just realize that we're weak people made of dust who have fallen short, that's a huge step into becoming this idea of least of these. And you might not need to shadow all that much if you just realize how big God is and how small we are.
Yeah. I heard a great way this was put. Don't see yourself as lower than anyone. And don't see anyone lower than you. Mm-hmm. And so in both cases, you're putting yourself as an equal. Consistently, it's just like, I'm not lower and no one is lower. Equal footing, no matter what somebody sounds like or looks like. So I'm not better than, and they're not better than, and I'm not worse than, and they're not worse than. And then you're always challenging yourself with that, just to be able to see things in a balanced way.
Yeah, sometimes I just define humility as just honesty. Like, if you can just be honest with yourself, your weaknesses and where you're really at and where God really is at and things like that, that's a huge step towards humility. But I think we're supposed to approach people with this, you know, gentle lowliness, and I think that's important too. But yeah, humility is just kind of that honesty with ourselves, which is hard for people. Yeah. It's hard for us to be honest with ourselves. I mean, the research is horrific around this. What, I forget what it was, 90-some percent of people do not see themselves hardly accurate at all, like, which is like if you were asked somebody, who are you and what are your skills, and they rate themselves, and then you go around and ask everybody around that person what their skills are, there's no match. We don't see ourselves accurately. And this is where we have trouble with humility often. I mean, there's some people who just are really down on themselves too and feel they're horrible at everything. But to even get to that point where you can see yourself is a huge challenge.
And it doesn't take away from your ability to be competitive or your ability to win, advance, grow, and even be able to take a lot of ground and succeed in great ways. It doesn't mean that great can't happen to you. It just is a position of your heart.
Yes.
It's, so it's not meaning, oh, what are you saying? Like, oh, no, this is a real depressing conversation. It's just like, I can't even win in life. I have to always stay low, 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 low. It's like, okay. Perspective.
Yeah.
This is a position of your heart in all places, so that you are not putting people down and causing there to be strife. Like, if people feel that in a person's presence, it's usually off-putting. You can still be a world-class athlete. You can still have won the gold medal. You can still be in someone's presence as a victor in all kinds of ways without making them feel like they couldn't do it.
Oh, totally. I think it's kind of just a shift in your thinking, like you're saying, around who's getting the glory. And it's like, well, can you become a gold medalist? And it's like, well, I was walking in God's purposes for my life. He's called me to run, and I'm running now in the Olympics because of God's grace, because he gave me this body, because he gave me the encouragement, because he's given me the opportunity. I have this money because he gave me the gift to think things through. I have this relationship because he put this person in my life. It's just an interesting shift to have your life focused. So it's like, can you do great things? It's like, yeah, but you're losing your life. You're not doing it for you, that God's great through me. And it's like, you could think of that as losing something. But you have to think also about what you get in return. Because what you get in return is a God who says that he's successful through us. Where he's like, I didn't just heal the nations, I healed the nations through you. And so there's this picture at the end of the Bible of humans standing around the throne, throwing their crowns down at the feet of God, and God then taking the crown and putting it back on the person. And that's kind of a picture of this least of these, where we're like, no, I don't deserve a crown. You should get the crown. We're saying that to God. It's like, you should get the crown. You're the one who gave me everything. You gave me all this money. You gave me all this relationship and status. Whatever I have, whatever it is, little or small, whether I think it's big or small, it's all because of you. And then God turns around. You're like, well, that doesn't feel fun to give it to somebody else. But yeah, but then you have this in return, which is incredible, which is God picking up the crown and putting it back on your head. And let me tell you, I think you're going to find God putting the crown on your head more meaningful than you putting a crown on your own head. And I think that captures a little bit. It's like, I'm the least. I'm just stewarding what God gave me. And I'm trying to do that in a way that expresses love and gentleness. And it doesn't make sense to do that unless you have God coming and putting the crown back on your head. Your human spirit was made to have somebody be proud of you. Why are you even running in the Olympics? You're not running in the Olympics because it's fun. You just run anywhere. You could just run on the beach. But you're running in the Olympics because you have a drive to have somebody be proud of you. You have a drive to have somebody see you and to validate you and to love you in your journey. And that's God putting the ultimate. Obviously, you can have family do that. You can have the world do that. You could have Facebook do it. But the ultimate, if you can experience this, you'll never get bored of it, which is why heaven is never boring, is because you have a God putting a crown on your head. And that's what we were made for.
Even now, in this life, Scripture talks about him crowning us with loving kindness.
Yeah.
So if that's what we're experiencing and encountering, our hearts are being filled with desire to be kind, a desire to love, and this transformation is happening from the inside out, that's the way he's crowning us so that that can seep into our being. And then that glory that we live in is all in this beautiful, encompassing, loving God. And what happens on the turn side is when we exalt ourselves. That's when we're humbled by God. And he isn't into that. And so if we humble ourselves, then he exalts us. This humility comes from first being able to accept that we're loved. And so humility isn't a kick in the pants. It's not a kick to the curb. You got to see yourself as less than, lower than, weaker than. You got to see all these things so that you can despise yourself.
No.
It's like to not despise small. It is part of how you end up being able to learn to grow. Don't despise the weak. And being able to do that means that you're transforming this picture of what weak looks like.
It's such a fascinating thing, because I think to feel like you're weak feels so punishing, because it's so in us to hate weakness. But what this is supposed to look like is you're supposed to realize you're weak. And honestly, just one trip to the hospital will do this. Like, it doesn't take much for us to realize that we're weak, which is why in the faith, God just says to fast. It's like, well, you give up food and water for, you know, 12 hours and see how you feel. You feel strong then. Like, it's like, we're so close to death, you know, like, just stop breathing for just a few seconds and you're all of a sudden realizing how weak we are. But we so associate weakness with detestable, weakness with unlovely. And I think where we're supposed to go is not go like, oh, weak, and then you have this hatred of yourself. No, you're supposed to go into weakness and then realize that you're supposed to love the least of these. And that's you. You're the least of these. We're all the least of these. It's not just love that other guy who's the least of these. Oh, other people are weak. I'm strong. I'll love them. No, you're the least. They're the least. And we're supposed to love them. And we're supposed to also love ourselves when we realize. And it's easier to love yourself when you realize that you're the least of these and God loves you. So this is all supposed to go together. It's not hate the least of these, including yourself. It's like, no, you're that. And so are they. And we're supposed to love the least. Because that's what Jesus did. Jesus didn't come down and love the greatest of these. Jesus came down and loved the least of these. And that's you. That's you. It's not the other guy. And so this isn't a low self-esteem depression talk. This is a realize the truth, which strengthens you to love, and then enter into love, and that'll lift you up. You don't have to be in denial about your weakness. You can be like, you mean I don't have to be the smartest guy in the room? I don't have to be the most beautiful person in the room, and I still get love? Yeah, that's the truth. You don't have to deny it and pretend you're the smartest. You don't have to deny it and pretend you're the most beautiful or hide it. You can actually enter in as you are. You can be honest about it, and God still loves you, and he wants you to love that person, that real person.
And perhaps you see yourself as great, like the disciples who came to Jesus, who started this conversation in the first place, is like, grant to us that we can sit in the kingdom of heaven, one on your right and one on your left. And he was showing them that actually that's not my place to give first. Like the Father's going to give that. And if that's something you desire, you should know that the kingdom works this way.
Yes.
It's opposite of what you're thinking. It's actually that the greatest is the least.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, okay, so then now they're racing to be the least. I can just imagine. It's just like, you know, here's my poop. Take my hat.
Yes. That's so funny. It's so funny. We're so backwards in some ways. Because the whole thing, right? We're so backwards compared to where God looks and sees and, you know, interacts. And we mess it up in so many different ways. But he's gracious, too. He's gracious to us, which is amazing because we wouldn't make it without it. He's filled with an understanding of our struggle, you know, to be the greatest at being the least, which is another kind of interesting thing. I'm the least, you know, and then you got pride in your leastness. And it's not the way, I don't think God views the world. It's not the way that he sees us. And so, yeah, I think there's a journey that we go through and he walks with us through it. And just like I said before, it's like, he asks us to fast. He asks us to give some of our money. He asks us to love people who are unlovely, which is all of us. And these are all of these things. And you could go harsh and you could say, well, he's against the proud, which I then would mean he's pretty much against all of us. But that's not the truth. What he's talking about there, he's against this proudness in us. And he's giving us lots of time. He's giving us a whole journey and all of these discipling tools, relationships and experiences and struggles. And he wrestles the pride out of us. As we journey with him, we learn. We learn to love and we learn to even love ourselves. We learn the truth of who we really are, and to love even that which he knew all along. He knew who you were. He knows who you are, and he still loves you.
It's beautiful. Well, thank you, Cyrus.
Thank you, Marianne.
Well, that was an honor to get to spend that time with you. Appreciate you tuning in. Please check out more of Dr. Cyrus at maplecrestchurch.ca and at drcyrusdirksen.com. Thanks again, and tune in next time for Bridging the Gap. I'm Marianne Rose.
When the doubt is rising up.